Well, City Charters often open, Larry, with great fanfare, high expectations, but the results have kind of been a mixed bag. A couple, Delaware Met, Moyer, have failed. Academia Antonio Alonso left the city for the suburbs. But a handful do remain and seem on track. Is there a common thread that runs through those still standing, or have they simply been able to carve out constituencies that work?
Well, there are currently four charter schools operating in downtown Wilmington, all of them just a couple of blocks from Rodney Square. Three of them are just completing their second year, and all of those appear to be off to good starts. Yes, there is a common thread, and that thread is that each school is based on a solid curriculum model. Great Oaks Charter, affiliated with similarly named charters in New York City, Newark, New Jersey, and Bridgeport, Connecticut, has a schedule that incorporates more than an hour and a half each day of one-on-one tutoring in English and math for every student. Freire, modeled after a successful program in Philadelphia, gives its students two periods of math and English a day in 9th and 11th grades. First State Montessori, well, that's a Montessori program, and that's one that's recognized worldwide for excellence in individualizing educational exploration.
And then there's Kumba, which has kind of established itself as somewhat the gold standard for making a city charter work, at least here in Wilmington. They've been around since 2001. They've expanded, they've moved, and they still serve a predominantly minority and low-income student body. That's a pretty impressive resume. How do they make it work?
Well, yeah, you spelled it out pretty well. The school struggled in its early years, but its leaders persisted. The quality of instruction improved, and its students have demonstrated respectable performance in the various statewide assessment programs over the past decade. And that's something you don't often see in schools whose demographic is 98% African American and Latino and 85% low income. One of the keys here is something that I've noted on other occasions about charter schools. Parents have to fill out an application to get their child into a charter rather than just sending them where their feeder pattern dictates. Parents who take extra steps tend to get more involved, and that is often a positive in their children's education.
And that also may be somewhat of the common thread that some of these schools in the city, like First State Montessori, Great Oaks, Freire, they do seem to emphasize, like Kumba, that parental engagement piece.
Yes, the more parental engagement, the better, and certainly all of the school officials that I've spoken to have said that. I know there have been some charters that I've spoken to in years past who said, no, that it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference in terms of parental involvement, but certainly the ones in the city, they're saying that yes, it absolutely does.
Kumba is one of the two charters that is in the Community Education Building, the former MBNA Bank of America office high-rise that was donated with the intention of creating a charter hub downtown. That has not panned out quite as expected. Where does it stand now, and what are those running it saying about its future?
The building's operators are trying, but I'm certainly skeptical about whether they'll achieve their goal of hosting four schools with a total of enrollment of more than 2,400 students in the next few years. Kumba has maxed out at 745 students. Great Oaks has 5 years of expansion ahead of it before it reaches its cap of 750 to 800. Academia Antonio Alonso, a dual language elementary program, left the building last year to move to the suburbs. So there's room for one or two more schools in the high rise, but there are no pending applications for new charters in the state. The Community Education Building team is also quite selective about its schools. It wants operators who can deliver high performance for students, but even they admit that their plush building is not the perfect setting for every school.
And I guess that kind of begs the question, were they just a little bit perhaps too optimistic about what they could do in a downtown setting?
I'm going to say yes, yes, that's the answer. It was an MBNA building. It was the Longwood Foundation, the largest foundation in the state, that engineered the acquisition and the transformation of the building. These are folks that are accustomed to thinking big in this environment. They're used to being able to get things done, they may be a little bit out of their league again in terms of going in and trying to set up a building with four charter schools and to do it phasing it in even over 3 or 4 years. I think they were expecting and trying to do too much too soon.
Let's talk a little bit more about this concept of city charter schools and being in the city, one of the things that all the city charters that have launched touted when they opened was the opportunities that being in the city would create for their students. Has that panned out for these ones that have remained standing?
Absolutely. It has. But maybe not to as great an extent as you might think. I mean, yeah, the kids get to venture out into Rodney Square, especially when there are festivals and special activities. Montessori and Kumba students hold dance lessons at the Grand Opera House. Montessori students visit the Wilmington Library regularly. Some Great Oak students have performed at the Queen. They visited the Kalmar Nichols Shipyard. So, yeah, there are plenty of opportunities there. But then when you think about it, you know, if you're taking your kids to the library because you don't have a library in your own building, well, you know, what does that say? I mean, it might be a prudent use of resources not to put a library in your school when there is one right around the corner. But you know, that's subject to some debate. So yeah, it's good that you get out, but all of these things might not be as wonderful as they seem. And I'm not putting them down, but it's something that you can talk about both ways.
And they have to be weighed against the challenges that being in the city creates. What have some of those challenges been for these charters, and how the schools that have remained and been relatively successful but overcome the challenges of being based in the city?
Well, yeah, similar situation here. The kids in the community education building, there's no gym there, so they've got to go to the Walnut Street Y for their phys ed classes. There's no big playground area there, so the youngsters at the lower grades at Kumba, they've got to walk a block and a half to a paved parking lot for recess periods. And these were a couple of the factors that were involved in Academia Antonio Alonso deciding that they wanted to move to the suburbs. Great Oaks is a middle school, transitioning into a middle school high school. They've got to have a growing need for athletic fields, and you don't find football fields downtown. Howard High School has the same situation. I mean, they've got to go over and play at Baynard Stadium, which is about maybe a mile away. But these are issues that city schools have to deal with. There are lots of trade-offs like that. The buildings that the charters are in weren't originally designed to be schools. Grassy play areas are hard to find in the middle of the city. So yeah, these are issues. Community education building is working to help Great Oaks and help Kumba find suitable sites for these activities, and will continue to do so. But it's not an easy fix, and it's not a quick fix. So you've got to realize that there are trade-offs if you choose to send your child to a school in Center City. There's some good things, and there are some things that you're not going to have that you do have in your typical suburban site.
When state approved creating charters, they were built as these incubators that would try new ideas, then collaborate with other schools to bring those best ideas to all schools. How have these charters performed in doing that, collaborating either with each other or with other schools with some of the things that they've been working on and developing?
Well, one of the best examples goes back a couple of years when the Brandywine School District started using this Singapore math program for its elementary students after Kumba had a good deal of success using it. Other than that, there hasn't been a great deal of curriculum sharing between charters and districts or even among the charters themselves. We are seeing other forms of collaboration. Kumba is among a group of charters that developed and shared an alternate format for teacher evaluations. Kumba and Great Oaks, being in the same building, are partnering in teacher recruitment and professional training, and there are other aspects of sharing that are also going on through the Delaware Charter Schools Network.
The idea of collaborating and sharing best practices is also an issue that the Wilmington Education Improvement Commission has tried to focus on, despite its uncertain future. Has WEIC been able to make any progress in terms of building this collaborative piece for charter schools and other schools?
Well, WEIC does have what it calls a Charter District Collaboration Committee, and this group has spent 2 years going back and forth, and the first year was kind of rough and getting over some of this distrust. The second year was a little bit better. And they've gotten around to suggesting that the charters and the districts get together and do something that has taken place in about 20 other communities nationwide, signing a voluntary compact that identifies ways that charters and traditional schools can cooperate with each other. And they've listed a couple of areas that are ripe for consideration. Partnering in teacher training, for example, coordinating kindergarten registrations. But there's really been very little talk outside of that commission framework about actually moving forward on any of these initiatives. So we're going to have to wait a while to see what happens with that.
And even beyond that, I mean, you mentioned that the kind of lingering mistrust. Is any progress often just undercut by that? We've seen it again in the charter bill currently before the General Assembly now regarding the five-mile radius preference that has some arguing that this bill would shut city kids out of a high-achieving charter like Newark Charter. Is that perhaps the biggest issue here, is that mistrust and finding a way to mitigate it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, this mistrust has been lingering, and it's the result of a system that has had the charters and the traditional schools competing with each other for more than 20 years. Charters get their funding based on how many kids they can attract out of the traditional school system, and the traditional schools complain that their planning becomes more difficult each year because they don't know how many kids the charters are going to take away from them. And then, you know, in some areas, and you know, Newark Charter is certainly an example of this, there's some issues about are these schools not necessarily segregationist, but they don't have the same racial demographics as many of the traditional public schools. So, you know, there's that lingering concern as well. I didn't write about it this week, but this, you know, the Newark Charter issue is worth a couple of quick comments. I mean, first of all, given Newark Charter's popularity, even kids living within 5 miles of the school still have to get picked in a lottery to get in. If you remove the five-mile limit and you use the suburban part of the Christina District as a border for enrollment preference, that's going to make Newark Charter's pool larger, but it's not going to make admission any easier, and it's not going to have a significant impact on the school's demographics. However, if you write a new law and it excludes the Wilmington portion of Christina from Newark Charter's territory, that's virtually the same as what the state did with the 1968 Educational Advancement Act, when it included language that barred any merger of the old Wilmington School District with suburban districts. And that law was declared unconstitutional in the desegregation case in the 1970s. To me, it looks like this amendment to the charter law would have the same impact and could set up a court case with a significant constitutional issue. On the other hand, and there's always another hand, Wilmington parents have been complaining for years that they don't want younger kids bused to schools in Newark. And I bet that even if Newark Charter might be considered worth the trip, there won't be many who are really interested in applying and then taking the ride. So let me leave you with this closing suggestion then. Let's save the lawsuit by letting kids in the Wilmington section of Christina apply to Newark Charter, and at the same time, maybe we think about creating another charter in Wilmington that could serve the Christina kids who are now on the waiting list for Kumba and Montessori.